You're listening to The Stressless Life with Dr. Yip, the podcast about conquering your fears and overcoming anxiety. A question for the day is, illness anxiety, when does caring about your health become unhealthy? I am your host, Dr. Noah Larracy. Let's say hello to Dr. Yip.
Hello, Noah.
Dr. Yip is a licensed psychologist who's board certified in behavioral cognitive therapy and an expert in the treatment of anxiety and OCD. So today we're going to talk about one of our favorite topics, illness anxiety, or the disorder formerly known as hypochondriasis.
Mm-hmm.
You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I think it depends. What exactly are we talking about? There are so many different forms of hypochondriacal presentations. So I think let's try to understand what is hypochondriasis anyway. What is your perception or your belief of what hypochondriasis is?
Hypochondriasis is the fear of being sick.
Okay, so that's one idea, the fear of being sick, the fear of not being well. However, then the question is, well, are you sick? Are you truly sick and you can't get the answers that you need? Or are you afraid of contracting an illness? Or is there some reasonable occurrence such as the Zika virus? And we're all on alert of contracting Zika.
So it sounds like you're saying that some fear of being sick is natural and is a good thing, but obviously it can be exaggerated by anxiety and can then sort of overtake your life a little bit.
No different than anxiety or OCD, you know, as I've said time and time again, that we have to think of it as a continuum, you know, from the point where it's completely excessive and taking over your life and interfering with your functioning to the other side of the spectrum where you don't care about anything, which might not be healthy as well.
I think illness anxiety or hypochondriasis is interesting because everyone has someone in their life who probably has this. Maybe it's a parent or a grandparent or someone that exhibits this. It's just kind of a classic presentation, isn't it?
Oh, yes. You know, I even have this book in my office that's 101 different things that will kill you. And that is a perfect example of how pervasive hypochondriasis can be. Again, the question is it excessive and therefore to the point where it's irrationally ruminated over? Or is it a genuine concern that we all need to be a bit more careful about? So, you know, what I like to do is actually distinguish the differences based on the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders. And in the current DSM, which is the DSM-5, there are three diagnoses that can potentially reflect on someone who is suffering from hypochondriasis. So the first one is somatic symptom disorder. And somatic symptom disorder is basically the person who is experiencing bodily discomfort, experiencing perhaps chronic pain, lupus, fibromyalgia, Crohn's disease. And these people are truly, genuinely suffering. Then the question is their suffering excessive or is it valid and just nobody have any information or ways of treating it? So somatic symptom disorder is basically people who may have certain symptoms, yet their experience of the symptom appear excessive and they're constantly searching for an answer. And perhaps there's not an answer because medical technology and research hasn't been as advanced as it needs. Because technology and medical research isn't as advanced as what we're hoping it to be. And therefore, there currently is not an answer for what some people are truly experiencing in their bodies.
So it sounds like you're saying these people have some sort of symptom or pain, but medicine can't quite figure out what it is, and the person that has it can't quite figure out what it is, and they really want to know what is the cause of this symptoms, what is the reason, what is the name for it, and the fact that they don't know that causes them a lot of discomfort.
Yes, and I think what is true for anyone experiencing an illness, anxiety, or hypochondriasis is that they have the need for certainty. They have a need to know. And therefore, their goal is to go all out to search for an answer for what it is that they might or might not have. The thing about somatic symptom disorder is that the person actually have some sort of symptom that they feel something uncomfortable, and there's not an answer and there's not a fix. And therefore, because of the uncertainty, they continue to ruminate and obsess and search for answers.
So the idea is if they knew what the cause was or knew what the reason was, their anxiety would go down, although not necessarily the symptom, but their anxiety would go down.
That could be so. At least there's an answer. So it's kind of like you never know what it is that you're experiencing and you want an answer.
Okay, so that's somatic symptom disorder. Mm-hmm. And what would be the next one on the list of the three?
Well, the next one is actually called illness anxiety. And illness anxiety is kind of like what most of us experienced, you know, when there was the Zika breakout. What if I get that? What if I go to South America and contract the Zika virus? Or when there was the Ebola breakout and we're all on edge and we're all checking our news to find out what is happening in the world. How far is this breakout occurring? So illness anxiety is you don't know whether you have the symptom. You might have the symptom. The likelihood of you getting the symptom could be possible. And again, because of that uncertainty, you are checking constantly to verify whether you actually have the illness or not.
So would this be someone that gets a cough or a sore throat during the time that Zika was around and they want to know, is this Zika?
Yes, exactly. So if during Zika was around, you know, you might do some symptom checking of your body to see if you have that virus. You might be checking with the internet. So the Mayo Clinic, Medscape, you know, all of those popular medical online resources, you'd be checking the symptoms to see if you have those symptoms. These are people who would chronically self-diagnose based on what the symptoms they find online and then what they experience in their own bodies.
This is as good a time as any to talk about WebMD and what effect it has on the lives of our patients. Because the internet and Google in particular has really broken a whole world open in terms of looking for symptoms, looking for reassurance, looking for evidence of some symptom that you might have, right?
Yeah, you know, the thing is, it's kind of like a double-edged sword, right? For those of us who do not have hypochondriasis, we can look at WebMD and take everything with a grain of salt because we understand that whatever WebMD indicates doesn't necessarily mean that's what we have. We don't go A plus B equals C. We don't do that. We go A plus B might be C, might be D, might be E. We don't know. We're able to entertain various possibilities. However, people with hypochondriacal presentations, what they do is they'll go, oh, that's what WebMD says. That's me. It is no different than reading the horoscopes. You're going to read it and you'll hear some of the characteristics and you'll go, oh, well, that sounds like me. They must be talking about me. So you personalize the experience and label yourself as whatever it is that you're reading.
So you look up Zika and it says one of the symptoms is fatigue. And you say, well, I'm tired today. Maybe I have it.
Yes, exactly. So that is illness anxiety. And again, it is the uncertainty of whether I have this illness or not that drives the checking to see if you actually have it.
So can we talk a little bit about people with illness anxiety, that there are some that go to doctors looking for reassurance, and there are some that actually avoid doctors looking for reassurance, right?
Yes, yes. So some people with illness anxiety will go to doctors after doctors after doctors to make sure. The reality is we don't live in a world where certainty exists. Again, according to Benjamin Franklin, the only certainty that exists is death and taxes, right? So even if you have a cough right now and you're feeling a little bit fatigued and you go go to the doctors and the doctor take your blood sample and the lab results come back with negative for Zika virus, that doesn't necessarily close the uncertainty gap for the person suffering from hypochondriasis. Because, hey, that test might be flawed. That might be a false negative. And maybe that wasn't really my blood. Maybe they switched my blood with somebody else's. Maybe the equipment to test the blood isn't accurate.
Or another one that I hear a lot is that a lot of people who maybe have Zika or some other virus go to this place to get tested. So maybe I caught it at the testing area.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, that can also be true. I caught it at the testing area. And therefore, I need to go get tested again just in case they didn't catch it the first time. So there is a group of people who will constantly seek reassurance from medical resources, whether online or physicians in person. And then there is the other group who will avoid such reassurances because if the doctor comes back with a positive answer, then that in itself is a huge fear that they're trying to avoid.
Which is understandable, of course. They don't want to get the bad news, so they just avoid the whole thing altogether.
That's right, except they don't stop ruminating about it. They still fear the possibility of having some sort of disease. I just don't want to know what it is. And I just don't want to learn about it because that might mean I only have 1 month to live. And if I'm going to die, I'm going to die without knowing that.
Although it would probably not be a very pleasant month because you'd spend the whole time ruminating over whether or not you had something. Okay.
That is true.
So that's the two out of the three of the illnesses or disorders. What is the last one that we need to talk about?
Well, the last one is hypochondriacal OCD. So OCD can present itself in a way where you are ruminating and obsessing over having some sort of disease, and you're constantly checking to see if you have the disease. And the difference between illness anxiety and hypochondriacal OCD is that when it comes to hypochondriacal OCD, it's very, very irrational. It's almost like the person almost knows how irrational and excessive their fear is. And the person doesn't want to be ruminating or obsessing over this fear. It's ego dystonic. So in psychobabble terms, ego dystonic means it doesn't fit with their values. It doesn't fit with their belief system. They really don't want to have these thoughts and have these fears and have the checking behaviors. However, they just can't help it. Whereas people with illness anxiety or somatic symptom disorder, it's ego syntonic, which means that it fits with their value. It fits with their belief system. They truly do believe they have some sort of illness or that they might have some sort of illness. And the checking and reassurances serve to fulfill that need. So it's the huge difference between, hey, I really want to know because I truly believe I have this versus ego dystonic hypochondriacal OCD. I don't know whether I have it. I don't want to have this disease, and I'm checking to make sure that I don't have it and I will never have it.
Let's give an example of hypochondriacal OCD and how it shows up. We've had a number of these at our clinic.
Sure. So HIV is a huge one. It's one of the classic hypochondriacal OCDs that many people suffer from. And we all know that HIV can be contracted through exchange of bodily fluids. However, there isn't evidence for contracting HIV any other way. The person with hypochondriacal OCD, their fears can be so excessive that they will believe that they can contract this disease through many other means. So for example, if there is a red spot on the wall, that spot might be blood. And if I touch that blood or if I'm close enough to that blood and that blood is contaminated with HIV, then I'm going to get HIV. And we know that is not a way that people contract HIV. Or if there's something slimy on the floor, that must be semen. semen. And if my shoe touches that slimy fluid on the floor and I touch my shoes, then I'm going to contract HIV. So those are some examples of how irrational, how excessive people with hypochondriacal OCD can present with.
So to distinguish that between illness anxiety, someone with illness anxiety, they really feel like what they're doing is congruent with their values. They feel like they're taking care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And it can make it very difficult to work with them because they can get very offended if you challenge them because they feel like they're really taking care of themselves.
Absolutely. Again, that's the difference between egocentric and egodystonic presentations. Egocentric is, I truly do believe this is what's happening. And if you try to convince me otherwise, or if you try to show me evidence of anything else than what I believe, then you're invalidating my experiences. Now, I would say that is harder for people with somatic symptom disorder because this group of sufferers actually is suffering from some sort of discomfort, whether it's bodily pain or another condition. They are truly suffering. Now, their experience of suffering, perhaps their tolerance, their threshold for experiencing discomfort is lower. And therefore, they're experiencing the pain at a much higher level. And the medical community cannot explain for the excessive experience that they have. However, to say that they are not suffering, you're just going to create anger, frustration, irritability, because they truly are suffering. And our goal isn't to invalidate their experiences. Our goal is to help them come to terms with a different way for experiencing their discomfort.
And that would be the acceptance of uncertainty?
It would definitely be acceptance of uncertainty, right? Because again, if I use the example of don't think of the yellow duck, what are you going to do? Going to be thinking of the yellow duck, right? So if you tell someone, I want you to not think of your pain, what are they going to do? They're going to be thinking of their pain. However, what I want you to do is think about, well, maybe there are many different explanations for your pain. And maybe there isn't just one explanation. And maybe you'll never know what that answer is. Maybe there are different approaches that can help you. However, as long as you are trying to look for that answer, as long as you're trying not to feel that pain, then what's going to happen is you're going to feel it even more so. So part of it is not just about accepting uncertainty. It's also about accepting this is where your body is right now. Now, what can we do to shift your focus and shift your perspective so that it's not just zoomed in on the pain?
So what are some other ways that we treat illness anxiety or hypochondriacal OCD aside from the acceptance part?
Well, there's definitely the exposure part. When we expose patients to the illness anxiety, we are literally exposing them to the possibility of having the illness. So for someone with illness anxiety, some of the exposures might be, well, we're going to expose you to potentially having the Zika virus, to having cancer. Cancer is a huge one for people with illness anxiety because the reality is there are a lot of people dying of cancer today, not in their 70s and 80s or even 60s. People in their 30s and 40s are dying of cancer. Even children are dying of cancer. So cancer is a huge one. And when we are exposing people to illnesses, we can't literally make them contract an illness, right? Because that would be illegal and unethical. However, we have what we call imaginal exposures, where we would prepare written narratives, stories of them actually going through the experience of suffering from cancer. And then if we can mimic bodily sensations, then we might add that in. And they would be listening to the narrative, reading their narrative, feeling the bodily discomfort again and again and again until they grow tolerance to it.
So someone with illness anxiety, for instance, they believe that what they're doing is congruent with their values. They believe in it. Why would they ever come into treatment in the first place?
Well, the reality is that most of them wouldn't elect to come into treatment. Either somebody else, a family member, a friend, persuaded them to come into treatment, or they've gone through all sorts of medical treatments and nothing has worked, and a medical professional referred them in for psychiatric, psychological treatment. And not because they're kooky or they're whack, to teach them different ways to cope with the discomfort that they're experiencing. So again, part of treatment for people with hypochondriasis is learning to tolerate the bodily discomfort. So this is very similar to when we treat people with panic disorder, because panic disorder is when you fear your physiological sensations internally. So you might fear your heart palpitating. You might fear sweatiness, trembling limbs. You might fear losing control over your body. You might fear nausea, dizziness that could potentially lead to vomit. And what we do with panic disorder is we do something called interoceptive exposures. We would have them drink, you know, a gallon of water and start spinning in circles or running up and down the stairs in order to mimic that bodily discomfort of nausea, that fullness, dizziness, sweatiness, shaky limbs. And the more you are exposed to those internal sensations, internal bodily sensations, the more you are used to them. Not that you'll ever like them. I think a lot of patients think, well, I'm never going to like feeling this way. Well, I tell them, well, I don't like licking the bottom of my shoes. Am I ever going to like licking the bottom of my shoes? No. Many people have seen me lick the bottom of my shoes in order to demonstrate I don't like it. However, I can do it. And the more I do it, the more tolerance I grow to doing it. And that's no different for any exposures, including interoceptive exposures or illness anxiety exposures. So for people who are afraid of contracting a certain illness or fear experiencing the bodily pains and discomfort, we would try to mimic whatever that internal physiological sensation is and expose them to that.
Last question. I'm very curious. So we just went through a very nasty flu season here in Los Angeles. What would you do if you had a patient with illness anxiety or hypochondriacal OCD and they're in treatment for 3 or 4 months, and during this time they do contract the real flu? When they turn on you and say, I got this due to these exposures, and blame you for it?
You might. The good thing is that the flu lasts 3 weeks, 4 at the most. Unless you contract a new strand of the virus, then it will be longer, which is exactly what happened to me. Except having to live with hypochondriacal OCD, illness, anxiety is a lifelong disease. So I rather do these exposure, suffer from the flu for 3 weeks, and learn, hey, my body is actually stronger than what I give credit to, and tolerate the discomfort, so that I have the belief in myself and my abilities to tolerate this discomfort versus having to live with this disease for the rest of my life. Now, do I really want to spend the rest of my life going on to WebMD every single day, seeking reassurances from all of my family and friends, calling the doctors and scheduling appointments for this test or that test the rest of my life? No, what kind of life would that be? I want to enjoy my life. So if that means going out, doing exposures, taking a risk, welcome to life, folks. taking a risk and potentially contracting the flu, then I am willing to take that risk, and that risk is worth having quality of life long term.
Okay, Dr. Yip, thanks so much.
Thank you, Noah.
That's all the time we have today. You've been listening to the Stressless Life podcast. Send questions, comments, or episode ideas to thestresslesslife@dryip.com. Check out our website at www.dryip.com/podcast. If you like what you've been hearing, please write us a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Until next time, stay stressless.